Okay.
Do you do it with you? Okay. And is a mic good? Does it record it? Okay. So you just switch it on and it records everything. Wow. Does even have, but if you put it on the...
be a partner to you, obviously there will be a level of adversarial exchange, but I will always make sure the chair is done in a way that there's respect for each other, number one. Number two, that people's dignity is not taken into dispute without any facts available. And thirdly, that it's done in a way to try and get the department to operate better. That is my goal as a chair, and I'm sure as a committee. Our issue is here not just to fight and to reprimand. Our issue is to help, to guide, to correct, and to make sure that you are the best department you can be under the circumstances. And that is the way that I will hopefully conduct matters and make sure it goes ahead. So I do also know that there's a bit of a misunderstanding in the sense that I'm told that in the beginning of the year, although the date I was given was somewhere in February, but in the beginning of the year you usually have a workshop which is in closed session and so on. If we need that, we'll have that. But this is not that. Basically what we're busy with here is the first start, kick-start of looking at the budget vote. Remember, we have to pass a budget by, I think it's the 7th of June. In this week, in this period, there's going to be an election somewhere. We don't know the date yet, but it's clear to me that around April, May, June, that there's not many programs. So there must be a reason for that. But even Parliament is going to have to sit some parts of that because the budget has to be passed by the 7th, and we have to have a budget vote. So this is really the start of looking at and being ready for that budget vote. And I'll explain the proposed program a bit more here just to show, but I want you to understand that this, if there's a need also for a workshop to sit down as you've done in the past to engage on certain things, well, we will look at that possibility. That's not beyond the realms of possibility. But it seems to me that it would not necessarily be necessary. Now, I want to also say that the minister would have liked to be here. She's apologized. If I am correct, she's either just landed or she's in the air on the way to Davos with the president to the World Economic Forum. And the deputy minister is in meetings of the cabinet. Obviously, with the minister away, someone from the department has to be in the cabinet meetings. So she's not here. What I am going to propose to the minister when she comes back, to see if she doesn't want to slot on our program, just to give us a bit of a political overview. The minister is also quite new, as you know. And to give us a bit of an overview of what the year looks like for her, what she wants to really prioritize, etc., and that we can engage on a political level. Obviously, these hearings here are more with the officials, which doesn't really include the politics of the issues, but more the kind of admin and that side of things. So I will, when the minister gets back, engage and see if there's space just to for her to give that bit of more political. I also want to say that, you know, I'm a stickler. I'm a man of habit. If you wanted to kill me, it's very easy. I drive the same place. I stop the same places. I go to the same shops. I've got the same hairdresser now for 30 years. I mean, so I'm actually quite easily easy to bump off if anyone has an interest in this. But what that means is that I'm a pain in the butt in a way, because I like to stick to processes and procedures and times and so on. So I must tell you that, as you know, the rules of Parliament are that we only need a quorum if we're voting. So if the meeting starts at 9:30, I start. I've started meetings in Parliament when I'm sitting here alone, and only the staff are here. I have done that. I really want us to. We have very little time. In the past, you know, we used to have 5 days a week as committees to sit. We now have one. We've now been able to get at least two, probably a week, for this term, because the term is much abbreviated. So really, I'm starting at 9:30. Most of the meetings on the program are at 9:30. It's only if Chileka sends a notice to change that time that we will. So just know now already that 9:30 on a day that the committee sit, you mind. We, okay. I want to first to be quite strict with this. The program itself, which I say I'm happy to engage in, because at this stage really it's something that I've just had to put together. We have sent you a notice like this, with the whole quarter of the program. You sent it out, okay? And then you'll see there's an Annexure A, which deals with one department's issue basically for this week, and Annexure B, which deals with another department. And then you'll see there's another funny thing called a continuous agenda. Now, I always keep a continuous agenda in a committee of all the kind of issues that we will want to deal with possibly, or will have to deal with possibly. And we will try, in those times when maybe we don't have something specific to do, to see if those items on the agenda, we can't bump them up to deal with. This is particularly important when one deals with a lot of legislation. And you can't predict on a given day when amendments will be back and so on, that one then uses a continuous agenda also to deal with other items. I would want the committee, if you have any other items to put on the continuous agenda, please let me know. I mean, I'm very happy to put it there, to have it as a running possibility of having a program. It also keeps the departments focused, because what they know is that thing is somewhere on that agenda. And it's just a question of time when we will be calling them up to do so. So this agenda for the moment, as I say, I'm happy still to receive further input from you to try and fine-tune it. You'll see it basically goes till the end of March. Now, they have given us quite a bit of time, more than usual, in this first quarter. I do assume it's because of the election that is coming. So we have been lucky in the sense that we've been given some time. And particularly in March, it looks like 3 weeks in March, the first 2 weeks in March and the last week in March are going to be just committee weeks. Just committee weeks, where we don't deal with plenaries and so on. So we've got space to really deal with a whole lot of stuff. And you'll see in that 2 weeks, first 2 weeks of March especially, we are going to basically spend our time on public hearings on the green paper. The end of last year, towards the end of last year, a green paper on climate change was produced by the department. And that green paper has a process whereby the department would probably want to try and finalize it by the middle of the year so that we have a policy document ready for COP17 at the end of the year that really guides us as a nation. Now, obviously, I know that little discussions, I've had brief discussions with the minister when we were overseas and on the phone here, very much wants this period to be used to try and acquaint the public with the issue of climate change, so that we really get the public on board to understand what it is we're doing, understand a lot of these issues, and particularly be in the loop for those that want to participate in the policy making process to do so. In my discussions with the minister has agreed that we can have public hearings on this matter before she finalizes the white paper, and obviously then in finalizing the white paper they will consider those issues. And then of course the next issue I've raised with the DG is how do we then make sure that before the white paper comes out there's a further interaction with us to make sure that where we have disagreements that there's a last chance to try and anticipate. You know, my view about white papers and so on, there are no rules of Parliament that actually regulates them. I know people say they are, but they're not. I mean, the Parliament just regulates how you deal with legislation and international agreements. And so it's important that in the process of drafting policy, we must get the public to be able to have a say. And I think this is the Minister immediately and readily agreed with that. And that, of course, then enhances the process. And by the time you get a white paper, actually there's been wide participation. And if there are disagreements, we clearly know what they are, and each side can then clearly state where they disagree or differ with it. Obviously, there can still be processes with the white paper, but usually a white paper actually spells out that there's now policy. And there's very little, I think, that one should do after that, because then it means you're not sure of your policy. And so really the idea is to try and get more input before the white paper, and then we'll see how we deal with the issue further. So there has been a deadline for the 15th of February We already sent out press statements, I think, in December, but it hasn't just been press statements. There's actually a list of people I discussed with different members of the committee that were with me in Cancun to identify all the usual stakeholders that are interested in this matter. And already we sent the press statement itself directly to those stakeholders. We've not left it. I haven't even seen the media pick up this issue, that there are public hearings and so on. So it's actually hopeless, seems to send it. I think usually with the media, you have to actually write the article for them and then just give it to them. Then they're much more happier and then they'll do it for you. If you actually send them a press statement to say that they're going to be public hearings, and clearly they don't respond to it. I think they throw it in the dustbin and just, so on. So what we've done is to send things directly to the stakeholders. The department, particularly the unit that is involved in that, Ms. Yawitz, Alf, I think if there are stakeholders, you can get the list from Ms. Marubela that we've sent it to. She's got all the lists that she sent it to, email. If there are more people you want us to send it to directly, members of the committee can look at the list, and the same with the department, look at the list. And if there are any others who... So at least we send it to the stakeholders directly and not make it that it's a hit and miss. Obviously, once we've received the submissions, I think we've received two or three already. Once we've received them, we'll go through them and see which ones we want to hear orally, which ones not, and we'll set up a program. You'll see in the program, the first 2 weeks of March have been set aside. The first 2 days is an AWEPA conference that I think we should maybe attend to. Is my proposal. It's really around climate change, I think, for the Southern African region. So it'll be absolutely ideal for us to go to this conference and really get a lot of information about climate change, so that when we get into the public hearings, we actually have 2 days of interaction and knowledge and so on. And then on the Wednesday, that'll be the Monday, the Tuesday, or whatever. Then the rest of that week, we'll start with the public hearings, and we've got the whole next week then to also do the public hearings. Then after that, we will spend time on discussing and drafting a report. Clearly, we can't hold up the processes in cabinet. We want to try and move as quickly as possible. So March is going to be very busy, very condensed. And what that means is, for us to be able to have a budget debate in June, we have to do a lot of the work around the budget vote in February. Okay? So in February, the department is going to be very busy with us. Now, the way we've dealt with it is that I've asked Environment to come here today, this morning, this afternoon. Unfortunately, we were told we can't have meetings because all the chairs have to be at a meeting. So we won't sit this afternoon, give you some time to get your offices ready after the long recess. But then tomorrow morning, we'll finish the Department of Environment. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll start with Water Affairs, and running the whole Thursday for Water Affairs. Water Affairs, we've got 3 sessions, tomorrow afternoon and the whole Thursday, and Environment, we've got 2 sessions this morning and tomorrow morning, okay? And what we will be dealing with are really the issues in Annexure A and Annexure B. It's in general to kind of look at the priorities and the programs of the department. Most of you were in the committee before, so you've looked at the annual report, you've looked at the strategic plan, you've looked at the budget, but we now have to try and see and concretize those issues, what we're going to do in the year. That is also why I think if the minister can make it, it'll be good to kind of give an overview of where we're going in the year. I can already say up front as the chair that I would think that in the Department of Environment we should have 1 or 2 focuses for the year, and I want you to think about it. I think the one obvious one is in climate change. It's COP17 at the end of the year. We've got a green paper to look at. So clearly, one of our priorities with this department will be that. And then the other priority that I would also be suggesting and think about as we go through these 2 days is I want to look at a bit more at compliance. The department have started a compliance campaign. And I really want that compliance campaign to find a place where they can come and tell the public what's happening out there. And I think this is the place where they should do so. So that doesn't mean if there's legislation that comes, of course we'll deal with it and prioritize it. If there are other issues that arise, of course we'll deal with it and prioritize it. But I think as a focus, I really think this year in this department, our focus clearly has to be climate change and I think this whole compliance campaign. Because if you look at a compliance campaign, you'll see how good our legislation is, you'll see how good our implementation is. We will there be able to see where we need tightening up and so on. But all this is, again, it's all provisional. These are just my views, preliminary. I want you to think about it. And obviously, the parties themselves need to engage on these issues in their study groups and so on as we go along. Then you'll see the rest of the program after this week, these 3 days. We finish on Thursday afternoon. Friday, we're not sitting. We cancel on Friday, but I've decided 3 days for us MPs on the first week is more than enough. I don't want to kill you in the first week. So Friday, you can do whatever has to be done. Then you'll see the week after that, there's no committee work. It's called a party week. It's when parties meet and have the khotlas and prepare for the year. So that week, we won't have any meetings. There is a plenary on the 3rd. For those of you who don't know, be ready for that one. Then our next meetings are, and that have been approved, are for the 8th and the 9th. The whole day of the 8th and the whole day of the 9th. Now, obviously after these 3 days, those 2 days I've kept for issues flowing from these meetings and what we want further follow-ups. But also in that week, I would want us to have the Attorney Generals, which I've already met with, not Attorney Generals, the Auditor General. I know one of them is here, Mary Ann. I can't remember your surname. There we are. I want the Auditor Generals to come and tell us the risks that are involved in each department, the financial risks that they're facing. It seems that this department, God forbid, you know, you never should talk, you can put mockers on people, but this department is relatively okay with that. But water fairs, there are quite a few challenges that we'll have to look at. So in that, probably one of those 2 days, I think the Auditor General should come and be able to give us the risks that are involved. And I particularly want to know what they and the departments are doing. I want the departments here as well that time to make sure that I know on each of the risks, what are the steps we're going to take in this year with the Auditor General helping the department to try and get those financial problems out the way. So that will be one of the focuses. And in that week, I will also want us to identify in this week which are the particular entities that we will, want to see. We don't have to necessarily see all the entities at this stage. Some of them are functioning well. The problematic ones I would want us to, in that week also to see. So you need to tell me. And then after that, you'll see that on the 15th and 16th, that's when the plenaries have started. Then we'll have every Wednesday and Tuesday for the rest of February in the morning available to follow up on issues that we need to make sure that we finish our hearings on the budget vote. So that by the end of February, we've basically done everything on the budget vote so that we can be ready whatever date they call us in June for a vote. Now this year the votes are going to be very different. We're going to do almost 8 EPCs a day. I mean, so you're not going to have, it's almost all going to be done in a week. So in any case, it's going to be a lot of EPCs. So we need to be ready at any time when they tell us suddenly this is our date for a budget vote. We need to be ready for it. So hopefully in February, that is it. As I've said, and then it comes to March, and then we'll spin it on the green paper. Now, please take these programs to your parties. As I've said, this is all provisional. I've had to sit down and do this myself because we were in the recess and everything's happened quickly. And whatever I've said here is, of course, subject to us coming back and still discussing this and having to change it if we have to or do whatever we want to. But please just bear in mind, basically, we've got until March, and after that, it's very uncertain what time we've got available, and we have to finish at least 2 things. The budget vote, everything we want to know about the budget vote, and the green paper. So that is broadly the program that we've got here. Obviously, the rest of the program for the year, I will want us, if the minister, once we've had inputs and interactions with the minister, I think we'll look for the rest of the year what our program will be. But I think, again, in this department, it'll probably be a strong concentration on COP and the climate change matters as we go ahead. I know, for example, people want us to be much more broadly participatory and engage the public. And the DJ and I have had some discussions on this already and so on. As I've said, that is the program. I would wait before we approve this program until parties have had a chance to discuss it and we've been able to look at it further. For today, well, I've told you already for the week what we're doing, so I won't go into detail on that. For today, I also want us to an agenda that's been sent to you. Basically, as I said, I want them to focus on really telling us what are they prioritizing this year within their strat plan and their budgets and so on. Secondly, where are the financial challenges and problems? Thirdly, what expenses have been spent since they've come to report to the committee last? And then the legislative program, whatever that may be. And then there are some specific issues. Climate change is one of them. Now, around climate change, I want members to please be aware that there has been some misunderstanding about the nature of this meeting from that unit dealing with climate change. In your report, there will already be some proposals on how we will move towards COP17 and what government has to do and some of the issues. That issue has not yet been processed through cabinet. As soon as processed through cabinet, which is, I think, going to be in early February, I know that the Interministerial Committee meets on the 1st of February on that. So very soon in February, those will be proposed. They're already in your report on the basis that, please, it is for your eyes only as a Member of Parliament at this stage. Please. Very soon, once cabinet has approved and so on, there's nothing secret, and when you read it, there's nothing secret. The problem is, we just have to be respectful towards the processes in the executive, okay? And I think that, please, that document should not yet be made, or if it does get made, that document can be made, but then clearly all the pages on that one issue have to be taken out, okay? Then you can give it to the public. But members of the committee can have it. I trust the members at this stage for them. And in a week or two, when cabinet has looked at this matter, then, of course, it will be made public, and then there's no problem, okay? So it's not a big secret. In fact, if you look at it, it's all procedural. But some of it is also strategic in terms of what are the kind of issues South Africa would want to take up. Now, we have to be a bit careful how we deal with those type of things, because this year we have a dual role in COP. This year we're the president and we're and a state with its own interest. So we have to be a bit careful how we project ourselves, that the impression is not created that as president of COP somehow we've already preempted issues and we've already decided on issues. We have to keep the ANC. We have to keep government's position, but also the ANC's position. But we have to keep that quite clearly. We have to the way we articulate it, we have to be careful in the way we articulate it. Because, as I say, you know that in, particularly those of you that were in Denmark, you go there and there's already preconceived ideas that there's bias and so on and so on. So we are trying, this is only to try and avoid that and to try and handle the thing in a proper way, okay? Once cabinet has a chance to discuss it and so on, then we're going to engage fully on these issues, and it's going to be in the public. And where it isn't in the public, we'll clearly indicate that it's not in the public and so on, and we'll do it on those occasions. So please, members, make sure that the document stays in your possession and doesn't, at this stage, get publicized. If the media does get hold of it, please be responsible and make sure that you respect the fact that it will just be a week or two before this thing will be public once cabinet has looked at it. Thank you. One or two other things. I want to let you know that it's important that we know. I've asked for the budget of the committee because I've had a lot of conflicting things. I see we were allocated 800,000 at some stage, of which 483,000 has been spent already. So I think it's important that I record at this stage that when I take over as chair, that the budget as it stands now is 316,000 odd cents, okay? I do this so that we're open and transparent about these issues and we know what's going on. If we want more detail about the budget, of course, we can get it via Ms. Marabella through the finance people and so on. In any case, we are, as chairs, discussing a whole lot of issues around this because there are areas that we're not happy with and the way that things are dealt with in the budget, but that will be for a later occasion. I think those are all the issues I wanted to raise. Oh, yes. Just to let you also know, there may be further slots available for us to deal with. It does seem that Parliament is now going to try and make Tuesday afternoons available for committees where there aren't urgent work to be done. There isn't urgent work to be done. As you know, until now, it's been very formalistic on a Tuesday afternoon. It hasn't really been a substantive issue. And there is the programming committee is looking at which Tuesday afternoons will be available for sittings of committees. And once they do that, obviously, if there's a necessity, once you've looked at the program, a necessity for us to have those meetings, then we will do so. And then, as I said, the last week in March is also now going to be a committee week, and it hasn't been programmed yet, but be aware of that. These are all just, I wanted to just get a lot of admin out the way. Today you'll see there were 5 reports on the agenda. These are reports, I understand, from the secretary that have stood over from last time. Now, obviously, I wasn't the chair, so it's useless me looking through those reports. So I've asked that they get circulated to each member, and I will give the parties a week or two to have a chance to look at those reports. The one is the annual report of the committee. The one is the performance of the department. The other one is the report performance of the Trans-Caledon Authority. And then there are 2 minutes that are there. 1 minute is actually interesting. It's one around climate change, which is where that input. So those 5 documents will have to be passed by this committee. But although it was on the agenda, clearly we had no time to be able to look at it. So please, will parties look at it, or members look at it in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And when we're ready, we'll put them on the agenda and we'll pass them accordingly. You should have received them in an envelope yesterday, I think. Then on the agenda, there's also a verbal report from the delegation that attended COP16. What I suggest, I've asked Mr. Matebe and Mr. Morgan, who were there, just to say a few things to us briefly. But we'll do that when we deal with all the COP issues. And we'll have a brief report. Of course, we will have a written report, which has now been drafted by the staff that were there. I need to have a look at it, and the other chairpersons that were there and the rest of the delegation just need to look at that report. And once that report is available, we'll obviously also circulate it to members, and we'll have to adopt that report at some stage as well. But it has just come to hand, and there'll be that report we have to look at with other committee chairs that were present. So that'll take a bit of time. So I think those are all the kind of interim issues. Before we start with the department, is there any one that needs to say something, that wants to question something, that wants to clarify something? So we're all happy. We'll then have the documents. Nothing yet has been approved in terms of the agenda or the reports. Parties will have a chance in the next few weeks. Well, the program will have to at least pass by the next meeting, which will be on the 8th. So please, parties, be ready to talk. If you already want to engage me before then, that's fine. Engage me, and it makes it easier. We can then put in things that we need to do and so on. And once we've done that, then the other ones we'll pass them when we're ready. Okay. DG?
Once again, thank you for being here.
If you can give an input, I think what we'll do, so it doesn't become too laborious, is we'll take some inputs on issues, and then we'll give a chance for interaction, then we'll take the next. Those issues at the end that are specific topics, we'll do each one of those on their own. But in the beginning, can you do that kind of overview where you're going with your department for the year, what your priorities are, the financial challenges, what money has been spent, your legislative program, all those general issues, could you start and take us through them?
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nosipho and Mama, and I'm here with my team, which I will quickly introduce. I thought I needed to do that because of appreciating the fact that there are new members in the committee and the chairperson himself.
Sorry, Chair, can I interrupt you?
Okay.
Before you do that and introduce it, I should have asked. Can our member just introduce so that the department knows who they're talking to? Sorry, can I?
I'm Johnny DeLange. I'm here representing the ANC.
I'm Mr. Matela, representing the ANC.
And he's also the whip of the ANC, just so that you know he's very important. And if you want things, you talk to him, not to me.
My name is J.J. Skosama, representing the ANC.
Mr. Ramina is Jane Mangani, the representative ANC.
Tikele Ditotesi, ANC.
Lance Schrelling, Independent Democrat.
Gareth Morgan, Democratic Alliance.
Sandy Kanyan, Whip and representing DA.
Philip Bengo, ANC.
Okay, that's it. Thank you. Sorry, DG, for interrupting.
Thank you, Chair. I'm with the DDGs of the department as per the request by the Chair. And we also have the specific chief directors that deal with the substantive issues that we are discussing here today and tomorrow. And as the Chair indicated, we normally use this opportunity as a workshop in order to probably provide more information to members in order to make and help the business of Parliament in regards to our portfolio to be conducted more smoothly and systematically. I have there Isham, just I think maybe you must stand up, colleagues. Isham is the DDG Corporate Affairs. Peter Luki is the acting DDG Environmental Quality and Protection. As you know, or as you will appreciate in my presentation, I talk also about the restructuring and reorganization in the department that used to be, the DDG used to be Joannia, which who now moved to climate change. Joanne? Can you say? And then Zahir Fakir is the DDG acting for International Unit. Also, Alf Wills as the chief negotiator transferred to the Climate Change Unit in anticipation for the role that we have to play in this year as the transitional measure. That's what we did as an organization to reorganize ourselves. We have Mr. Mketeni Fundisile, DDG Biodiversity and Conservation, who is on study leave chair, but had to at least come and show face today, and he has to go back tomorrow. And Liz McCourt, Chief Operating Officer, recently appointed from the 1st of January. She used to be the Chief Director responsible for environmental impact management in the department. And Razina Omar is the acting DDG Oceans and Coast. Dr. Mayekiso is still on leave. We do then have the chief directors and some of the directors. I think you can just all stand up. I'm not going to introduce you now. Or should I do that? Anne Thompson is the chief director for human resource management. Esther Macau, where are you, the chief financial officer? Dora was sitting there, but she left. Is she still here? She's gone. Yeah, some of them. Yes. I'll be Mudisa, chief director communications, and most of the media people that are here can immediately direct their inquiries to him. And Gwinumzi also left, is not here now. Gwinashe Banga, program manager for COP17, working under the leadership of Joanne. Sikwati is the Director of Supply Chain Management, Mr. Rahoho. Veronica Stein, Director of Budget Management, in terms of reporting to the committee on our budget allocation. That work was handled there. And then Mr. Vessels, where are you? Financial Director of Financial Management, there is he in respect of our expenditure, and that's the man that can also confirm further. Shoni, I did not introduce you. She's a Chief Director for Biodiversity and Heritage, and we have also Mrs. Manojo, who's the Chief Director of Protected Areas and Transfrontier Conservation Areas. And Hanley Schumann, she is dealing with governance and partly also as part of support to the Chief Financial Officer. Ashley Johnson and Ashley Naidu, they are the directors that are involved with the oceans and coast, both in terms of biodiversity ecosystem research, and and that's all. Yes, and then Dimpo is our Chief Director responsible for business performance, and Kwanele Mashiyi is then our parliamentary officer. We also have here Mr. Errol, what's his name? Mahoba, yes. From the Office of the Minister, as a parliamentary officer. Manza Matebula is the media liaison in the Office of the Minister. Where is he? Okay. So the Minister's office is also here. So honorable members can be comfortable that there will be feedback to the Minister. I will quickly run through the presentation, and my presentation is going to be supported and supplemented by the DDGs, who will quickly talk to progress to date, and then the Chief Financial Officer will talk to the expenditure and budget matters. Just as an introduction, following the having seen the people that are doing the work, the programs that we run as a department, we have administration, which is also which is handling more our corporate services, and also some of the executive support functions under the Chief Operating Officer. Environmental quality and protection, focusing on protection and improvement of the quality and safety of the environment. And then the oceans and coast management in terms of protecting our ocean integrity. Climate change, and focusing more on effective national mitigation measures and the framework, therefore, also for adaptation and response to climate change. Biodiversity and conservation is then a branch that's focusing on a program of conservation and sustainable use of natural resources, and sector services, environmental awareness and international relations is a program that helps the department to create conditions for effective cooperative governance and international cooperation, including the expanded public works program. In terms of then what makes us to exist, honorable members, as an organization, legally and constitutionally, we have a mandate. We are then responsible for executing the mandate of the department that is underpinned by the Constitution, Section 24A and B of the Constitution, in terms of the Bill of Rights, which states that South Africans have a constitutional right to an environment that is not harmful to their health and well-being, and also to the environment that is protected for the benefit of present and future generations through reasonable legislative and other measures that help us then to prevent pollution and ecological degradation, promote conservation and secure ecologically sustainable development, whilst promoting justifiable economic and social development. And in essence, honorable members, the branches, as I outlined in the program, talk to that provision of the Constitution and also respond to the legislative framework that has been passed by Parliament, the Acts of Parliament. Firstly, the founding framework legislation, which is the National Environmental Management Act, and the subordinate pieces of legislation, which is related to Protected Areas Act, Air Quality Act, Biodiversity Act, Waste Act, and Integrated Coastal Management Act. We're also responsible for the World Heritage Act of 1999, which provides for the cultural and environmental protection and sustainable development of declared World Heritage Sites. That function we cooperate on with the Department of Arts and Culture. We then have also regulations and policies that were passed and approved by Cabinet, basically that would have then assisted us in terms of executing the functions accordingly. We, subsequent to the reorganization of the state, honorable members, we had responded by then readjusting the functions of the department based on the separation of functions from the old Department of Environment and Tourism, and we now are falling under the Ministry of Water and Environmental Affairs, but we are a standalone department, is the Department of Environmental Affairs, and we have a separate vote in that regard. I added these slides after the meeting that I had yesterday late with the chair, which just indicates where we are in terms of the restructuring. As you recall, in the committee last year, we also tabled the annual report for the old department, and you then, as a committee, had to recommend that the Parliament then must accept our annual report in terms of that old department. As from the 1st of April this year, we have transferred the functions of tourism to the new Department of Tourism, and the public entities, which is the SA Tourism and the Tourism Enterprise Program accordingly. In terms of the functions that had to be transferred to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the fisheries functions that were under the Marine and Coastal Management were transferred to DAF. However, we remained with the conservation functions, which related to specifically Sea Fisheries Act, Section 38, that deals with permitting and the collection of shell grit, which is also a listed activity in terms of environmental impact assessment regulation. We then transferred the Marine Living Resources Act in respect of the utilization of marine living resources, except the marine protected areas and the protection of the marine marine environment. And lastly, also there are some of the regulations that then were transferred to DAF in that regard. We remained also with a structure that was approved by the DPSA, and that structure has a complement of posts of 1,084. We were sitting at 24% vacancies, but the DDG, Corporate Affairs, when he makes his presentation, you will quickly dwell on some of the issues in respect to where we stand now, both in terms of retention of staff and also recruitment processes in terms of filling in the new positions that were created with that structure. Honorable members, we also outline issues that we're now forcing us as a department to refocus further our work and the work of this sector based on the problem statement that arises from a report that was compiled more scientifically, which is what we refer to as the State of the Environment Report, which demonstrates, in a sense, the state of the environment of the country. And that report indicated that the environment is continuously deteriorating. As you, just some of the facts, I want to go through all the slides. South Africa, we are amongst the first top, or the top 20 greenhouse gas emitters, and we also, that report also noted an increase in water pollution and to a certain extent poor air quality that contributes to harming people's health in some areas. And we have municipalities and that have not been able to manage waste effectively, and there are communities that still have lack of access to waste services, and also some of the health facilities in our land are notably not compliant in terms of managing health care waste. We're sitting also with challenges in respect of our fauna and flora that is overexploited. And we are not anti-use as an organization, and also I think as South Africa we adopted the principles of sustainable utilization, but our consumption patterns are exceeding the ability of the natural resources to replenish themselves naturally. We have estimated 50% of our wetlands that have been destroyed or converted due to bad management, land management practices, and that would undermine our future water resource integrity in the long term. I've listed the other issues, and I'm just going to talk to two per slide. We have challenges of a spread of alien invasive species that threaten our biodiversity. We have unplanned and uncontrolled coastal development that continue to cause a threat to sustainable development. Our current work on protected areas is not sufficient to provide ecological services and socio-economic benefits that would accrue, especially also then that condition gets worsened with the phenomenon on climate change. We have strategies that would respond to these issues, and I'm just still outlining two issues on this slide, issues that impact on the environment, in particular mining activities, as it relates to the issues that have also been covered by the media, acid mine drainage, and that go beyond mined areas. We have land degradation and soil erosion challenges that still also undermine productive potential of our land. And next slide. We then had in our current threat plan that was passed by Parliament, we outlined our vision and mission, and we will then review that strategic plan going into the future. Our current vision is that of us striving for a South Africa or South African citizenry that seeks to have a prosperous and equitable society living in harmony with its natural resources. As an organization, we are upholding a value system based on people centricity, and we have a staff complement that upholds the highest levels of integrity premised on professionalism, service excellence, honesty, transparency, and trust. DEI is an organization also has been an organization that's focused on performance, through productive and effective systems that are in place. We have a balanced scorecard system that supports the work of the department in order for us to stand scrutiny in terms of what has been achieved over time. And we then seek also to ensure that we remain sustainable both in terms of people that work in the organization as we change the direction and there are impending new priorities. We still have to make sure that we continue to work in a sustainable fashion and do not then drop even the standards into the long-term future. Our goals currently that are outlined in the current strategic plan, we have five goals. One that talks to delivering on our mandate, growing a learning organization that is built on human capital foundation. We have a focus on operational efficiency and a financially responsible and accountable institution, including a focus on empowerment through the information and sound stakeholder relations. Our future goals, I think right now I have copies of the strat plan were circulated to honorable members, and I'm not going to go into the details of the strategic objectives to each of the goals. In terms of the future, the department that now has to also refocus in terms of the new government's new outcomes-based approach. The department has begun to reformulate its goals, and we have a goal that's directed at a broad sector focus. Goal number one, which reads as environmental assets to be conserved, valued, sustainably used, protected, and continually enhanced. Again, that's a formulation of exactly in terms of what is the outcome that we want to see in over the MTEF period. And goal number two, which is the socio-economic contribution goal and a sustainable development focused goal, we seek to enhance socio-economic benefits and employment creation for the present and future generations from a healthy environment. And through that goal also we would then be responding to the new growth path and the current government priorities in terms of job creation potential and the green economy of this sector that is also being coordinated by this sector. And goal number three will then be an internally focused goal in terms of the department that is fully capacitated to deliver its services efficiently and effectively. So we have therefore refined the goals and as per the constitutional mandate of the department and also in response to the public service administration prescripts. We've outlined then what becomes our main priorities within the things that we've been undertaking as a department. As currently as a department we are bleeding from the restructuring both financially and the current financial constrained environment does not help us focus on doing everything that we would like to do, and therefore within the budget constraints we want to balance and to have a functional ratio between personnel and operational budget, and the CFO will talk to that when he presents the figures. But in the main, we have a program that focuses on supporting local government, in particular capacity to plan, implement, and enforce in the context of air quality management, waste management, coastal planning, and biodiversity planning, including open space planning. We then have a focus that's also linked to strengthening government systems and aligning to the outcomes-based approach both we are responsible for outcome number 10, which is an environmental outcome, and also other outcomes of government out of the 12 key outcomes. We would want to then pick up the three main issues on government, on governance, mining, how we make sure that there is movement on the agreements between the department and the Department of Mineral Resources in order to have a more streamlined system of environmental authorizations. We currently run two separate systems that compromise the environmental integrity and the process of getting to those decisions. And in a sense, that is an area where Parliament passed legislation on or amended regulations also, both in terms of the EIAs and also in terms of the Mineral Development Act. We are seeking then to also focus our actions at a national level on possible alignment of administrative processes that would result on integrated permitting processes, in particular if we take into account the EIA's water licensing, taking into account that we are in one department or under one ministry currently, and also to align with the mining authorization processes if that is achievable. We are then also going to be using the environmental management frameworks as key instruments in terms of dealing with land use issues in order to put ourselves in a position where there is a more systematic process of facilitating trade-offs in terms of good systems of decision-making in dealing with competing land uses. Again, this is an area which we have to work with the Departments of Land Affairs, Land and Rural Development, and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. We are also in an area of governance looking at our public entities in terms of rationalizing the functions of the public entities to make sure that we achieve a better economies of scale in light of the dwindling financial resources over time. We have already engaged with Treasury and appointed a technical assistant unit of the National Treasury to help us with that investigation, and that outcome of that work also is going to inform the work of the presidency that relates to review of the state-owned enterprises and public entities. Again, a third area of focus on compliance and enforcement, singling out healthcare risk, healthcare waste management of that, working closely with the Department of Health in that regard, and also dealing with illegal trafficking of various species, in particular rhino poaching, which is a huge challenge that faces us currently, and the DDG will just give a snippet on the progress in that regard. Compliance and enforcement in respect of environmental authorizations that we issue ourselves at a national level and even at a provincial level in respect of the EIA regulation. The next priority in terms of climate change, both in terms of the fact that currently we're hosting the Conference of Parties this year, we are focusing on developing a policy for the country in terms of response to climate change and aligning that work to our sustainable development framework that already has gone through Parliament. Again, on the key areas of engagement at an international and national level, we would want to run public awareness and education and advocacy. That helps us to then make sure that the public out there understands where we are in respect of the environmental issues and how best they can assist us in the fight against environmental crimes. And the DDGs will present immediately after the CFO, and I want to invite the CFO to quickly take us through the financial presentation, Chair. And for in the main, he's going to focus on the expenditure today and also the key issues in respect of the allocation that we received from the National Treasurer. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, DG. Basically,
can you help me, which document were you working? I've got here under this yellow with list of document number 4, third quarter financial report, expenditure report, expenditure, MPEF allocation, current expenditure. Is it those reports? Okay. So it's number. Did you also get these packages like this? Under number 4. Number 4, there's a whole lot of financial reports.
Thank you, Jim. This is just a quick outline of how I'm going to look at the expenditure. Basically, I'm comparing the first three quarters of the previous year. There's a typo that's supposed to read 29-10, then 10-11, just to see how we're doing, you know, like the quarter. And then from there, we're looking at how the department reprioritized, as the DG said, in the presence of a declining budget. And then we look at, you know, like our donor funding. And then we look at our MTF allocations, including the challenges and the transfers, mainly to other departments like tourism and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. The departmental baseline initially was about 2.6 billion. And we actually, you know, like had shifting from funds, you know, like Department of Tourism, about 10.6 million for accommodation. And then we've transferred to the Department of Agriculture 141.4 million. And then from there we received 8.5 million for our, you know, our salaries, and then a special allocation for the SA Agalas engine. So in essence, despite, you know, like those, we can see that our baseline is decreasing from 2.6 billion. To about 2.5 billion. Because of, you know, like financial constraints, we also conduct some prioritizations in the budget. Here in this slide, we can see how much we increase for our employees, for our compensation of employees, about 30 million there, and then also reprioritizing for office accommodation, about 30 million. So during the year, we reprioritize 65.9 million, or about 66 million. This is the expenditure for the three quarters of the previous year, just to be able to see how we are tracking. 17%, 22%, and 29% for the first three quarters, 32% last year, and ultimately we spent. Yes, that's salary.
Just be a bit more clear, okay?
Like compensation of employees, yes, it's salary.
Where is money, you know? Maybe it's just something you're keeping in. Yeah, I think so. If that is the case, you must come and speak to the committee as well. Slip something, isn't it? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. As I said, here we're just looking at the quarters of last year, how we performed. Right, last year 17%, 22%, 29%, and 32% to spend the 2.7 billion that was allocated last year. So that is the previous year. Now we're looking at the current year. This year we're progressing well. First quarter 18%, second quarter 29%, and then third quarter 22%. Right. And so far we've spent 1.7 billion, which is 68%. And then we looked at, you know, like our commitment for the last quarter, which means we're trying to do an accrual to say what is it that we didn't spend, because our projection for the third quarter is about 72%. And those are some of the commitments that we had last quarter where invoices were not yet paid. And then like the transfer to Wayside Bank, payments to the Department of Public Works because their invoices are coming in slow. Some transfers to public entities for infrastructure development, Isimangaliso and South African biodiversity. and we are still awaiting our invoices for COP, and then we still have waiting invoices from CITA, and then EPWP incentive programs, 29 million, and then we haven't paid for our new building, you know, like a big development cost of 7 million, and then we are saying for the third quarter, we think we had outstanding expenditure of 98 million, which was supposed to bring us to the 72% of 1.8 billion. That is just.
You're on target, basically.
Yes, we are on target to the spend. Yes, okay. And then that is just a summary according to the programs that the DG has listed, and that's where the 68% is. Our 2.5 billion, our budget, and then from the expenditure up to the 31st of December, 1.7 billion, and then available funds up to the up to the end of the year, 786 million, 68%. And that is just a summary by program, that's administration, and the main expenditure there, most of the time, is for our office accommodation and facilities management. Okay. And that is the detailed analysis for program one, which is administration. We can see the office accommodation, 41.7 million, and the biggest expenditure, again, there being compensation of employees, 58 million. And the other small expenditures, like, you know, like system support, and that's where the CITAs are. And then that is just the continuation of the detailed analysis of expenditure for program one. And then we're looking at program two, which is environmental quality and protection. They're also standing at 68%. And if you look at their details, their main expenditure again is on compensation of employees and all the other, you know, like main items that we've highlighted there, like the waste management officers conference, as well as, you know, like other expenditure, and mainly the consultants. We've got annex charts that we've attached for detailed analysis of consultants, travel, projects, and all main expenditure items. And that is oceans and coastal management, also tracking at 68%. The main expenditure under oceans and coast is, you know, like the mainly the maintenance for the vessels as well as the operations for the vessels. Okay. Climate change also tracking well at 61%, and we can see that under climate change, the such that we included our polar vessel there, 467 million of that is actually, you know, like the replacement of the polar vessel. And those are the main expenditure items for under climate change, manning and operational cost for the SA Agalas, and then relief voyages to Marion Islands. And then under biodiversity also, the program is tracking well at 75%. And the main expenditure, compensation, as well as other operating expenses, travel and domestic travel and foreign travel, under the detailed spreadsheets that we've attached as annexure. I think that is annexure A. Also, program 6 is tracking well at 74%. Also, the main expenditure there we can see under Program 6 is our expanded public works projects, and we've got a detailed analysis of those as Annexure B. That is just the classification according to our economic expenditure items. We can see there our transfers and to our departmental agencies is about 1.2 billion. And the top lines are just, you know, like the analysis of our compensation and use of goods and services. And furthermore, then there are details to all those lines. Okay, next slide. And in this slide, on the current expenditure, we've also made a detailed analysis for our biggest expenditure, which is consultants and advisory services, as Annexure D. We also have travel and subsistence under Annexure A. And then the Another big one we can see there is our leaseholds, our property expenditure. Our operating leases of 41 million. All the other small items are, our consumable stores. And all those annexures are actually provided for the members. And here is a synopsis of our transfers again to our public entities and the analysis of the 1.2 billion that we transferred to the public entities is also attached. And the public entities are also tracking well at 73% as expected. Okay. Looking at our transfer to public entities, we can see South African... Please go back. Yes. South African Weather Services Analysis, their financial analysis, transfers for the infrastructure development, as well as for the radar equipment modernization capital expenditure. And here we see transfers to South African National Park. Main allocation there is financial assistance, that is for their salaries and their operations, and then from the earmarked funds, which are of capital in nature, parks development, roads, as well as protected areas, as well as the other allocations for the forest. And then we can see the nature of the transfer to Isimangaliso Wetlands Park, their financial assistance for their operations, again, forest rehabilitation and infrastructure development. The last two lines are earmarked funds. And then also our transfer to our SANBI, financial assistance and earmarked funds for, specific implementations in the business plan, climate change, infrastructure development, and the expansion of gardens. And here it is an analysis, again, as we said, Annex Chap B, a detailed analysis of our projects. Those are our expanded public works projects, 492 million, year to date, 335 million, and then tracking well at almost 70%. And those are our contribution for our memberships in the global, arena, 9 million. And then we also do transfers, as we listed them, to non-profit institutions, the biggest one being Buisa IBEC, and the smallest, the World Wildlife Society of South Africa for Environmental Management. And that is the analysis of payment for capital assets. We said in the capital assets, the biggest item that we show them is the replacement of the polar vessel. And that is just also a small analysis for detailed capital expenditure. And that is a list of our foreign assistance, which is, we are saying this year it is actually declining. At the bottom of it, you'll see that it's about 32 million. Previous years, it was around about 45 million or 40 per annum. There's a total there, 32 million. And these are the transfers for our expanded public projects, as well as for the themes that we are working on: waste, coast, people and parks, land-based livelihoods, and part of training that is actually conducted in those projects according to the details. And that is, the overview of how we spend by project as well as by province. Also, other entities that we're transferring to and universities. And that is our equity, women, BEE, and disabled. Those are, a synopsis of our performance on our full-time equivalents, as well as our training opportunities that we've created, women empowerment and youth empowerment. This one is the analysis of our MTEF allocation, the move from the baseline, the first year 2011-12. We can see we had a budget of, a baseline of 2.8 billion. We had a cut of 85 million, that is the bottom block, right at the bottom there, where National Treasury was reprioritizing from our goods and services to compensation of employees, because we had a serious shortfall in our compensation of employees line. And we can see there, right at the bottom, the 197 million, 203 million, and 139 million, that is the transfer to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries with the shifting of funds. We can, if you look at the difference between the 2.8 on top baseline and right at the bottom, we can see that the net change in this allocation is basically the allocation for COP 17, that is the 200 million. Removing that 200 million, the effect is that we started with 2.8, we are now at 2.6 for 2011-12, 2.3 for 2012-13, and then 2.6 billion for 2013-14. So for the coming 3 years, we'll be operating with a declining budget. And this is how we cut from operations. We funded, we cut 76 million from operations, funded our compensation of employees 46 million to correct the baseline, and then we made a small provision of 12 million for funding critical posts, and then we also funded Sanbi, also they had, you know, like shortfalls in their operations, and we funded Isimangaliso and as well as Oceans and Coast new premises in the waterfront. And then we also had further cuts which are affected by cabinet, 8.4 million in 2011-12. And then we just allocated that to Buisa Ibeg, as well as, you know, like cut a little bit from the ministry and across. The challenges over the MTEF, we highlighted, you know, like our main cost drivers. Vessel operating costs are the main cost driver. Accommodation, municipal services. We are also working on funding the new building for the department. And then, as the DG said, we've got a lot of integrated work with local government. So green economy, environmental awareness projects, as well as events, we have to reprioritize from the decreasing budget to be able to carry out those functions. We also keep on noting the decreasing donor funding, as well as funding of infrastructure for public entities, as well as the deficits that are emerging continuously from the public entities. Thanks.
Okay, that's a whole mouthful. What's the time? Okay, so we're going to have a small break, but just be aware we're going to come back for questions and inputs and so on. I imagine that this last page is probably the most important one. I must say I find this input very, very easy to understand. CFO, I congratulate you. It's a very nice way of breaking it down. But I suppose this last page is really where we're at, but of course you can ask anything. And then with the DG, the first issue she raised, obviously of particular importance there, again, are those top priorities areas at the end. That is really what they're going to focus on. And to what extent we also want to focus on those or not. But again, as I say, you can ask anything. Let's try and not ask questions of things to come, like the legislative program, the specific items. Let's try and concentrate on these things. So let's have a small comfort break, 5 minutes, and then I hope we can find a toilet for everyone that takes go quicker than 5 minutes. But if not, stand in the queue, and then when you finish, we'll all be here and have something to eat and drink.
Wait a minute. I'm not sure. Oh, it's for me. We have raised.
No, no, no.
Okay, let's go. I say my American friend, yes, I say this in a lighter vein, but we do have some embassies here, the American one. I just wanted to say, be careful what you report back, because it may all land in WikiLeaks. And they will say, Fit Matebe said. The DA said. So you'll read about this in a year's time. You'll read about yourself on WikiLeaks. So beware. Please report carefully. Okay. The WikiLeaks has got everyone jumping. One of these days, the leak stuff from opposition parties also there. Then we're going to have fun. And we'll see how happy people are for open for openness. Okay. That's all on the lighter note. Let's members, any questions, inputs, engagement. Let's keep it to two questions. Don't make them subsections. And if you've got more, I'll put you again at the end. You'll have all the time you wanted to ask questions, okay? So let's keep it to two, and then we'll give others a chance. We'll ask a few at a time. Mr. Matebe? Mr. Morgan? Sorry.
Thanks, sir. And let me also thank the DG and the CFO for this wonderful presentation. My question relates to the outstanding transfer. You have alluded to the fact that there is an outstanding transfer to Winita APEC. And I think this does not happen for the first time. Last year we were told that they got the allocation 2 months before the end of the financial year. So we were wondering as to how do they, are they going to rise to the occasion to meet their challenges within 2 months? To me, it's impossible. And right now we are in January. And 2 months again left before the end of this financial year. And there's still outstanding allocation to them again. What might be the problem? Obviously something is wrong. Is it because the department not putting their things in order, or with the impact that present the department with their business plans or whatever in time? So can the DG or the CFO clarify upon that point? Last one. In all these units that the CFO was presenting here, there is one line of performance bonuses everywhere. And at the same time, you talk of consultants. So obviously something here is not going right. If you are incapacitated to an extent of external consultant, how do you get performance bonus?
That is a very good question. It's as if I asked that question.
Thanks, sir.
Performance bonuses. That's a very funny thing in government. Never understood it myself. Mr. Morgan.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the DG and the CFO for the initial presentation. Best of luck for 2011. I just want to talk about some of the priorities. You've obviously committed yourself, and the chairperson also mentioned that it might indeed be a focus of this committee, which I certainly agree with, that being compliance and enforcement. It's worth noting that it's probably roundabout this year for much of the legislation that has come online recently, that it is a good year for actually the consolidation, implementation, and measuring what has been done. And when I say that, the Air Quality Act is in full commencement, has been for all parts of it, has been for over a year now. Integrated Coastal Management Act and the Waste Act, all the last pieces of legislation passed, I think they were all went through either late 2008 or early 2009. So there's certainly been enough time between a lot of those passing of those pieces of legislation and 2011. So I concur that the in compliance and enforcement it definitely should be a priority for 2011. With that in mind, then you actually put up three different subcomponents: the healthcare risk weights, rhino poaching, and EIA. If I could just mainly comment on the first two, but probably also say that I would hope that air quality as well would be a component of improvement in compliance and enforcement going forward. And I know that the department has made great strides in the last year or so with that. But particularly with rhino poaching, can you, and I'm sure there'll be a subject of many more briefings to come, can you talk us through, in fact, why 2011 will be different from 2010? And by that I mean, hopefully there'll be an improvement. 333 rhinos killed last year. Off the top of my head, about 130 in 2009. So almost a 300% increase. I'm aware that you did make some strides last year. You.
There's a specific input on rhino poaching.
When is that, tomorrow?
Could be later today, tomorrow, depending on how fast.
Is it happening? Is there a specific input around it later today?
If you look at the program, then you'll see there's specific items in the annexure. They will be coming later. They are climate change on its own will come.
Okay.
Report back on environmental law compliance campaign. So the whole campaign that's going on. Then poaching. Then regulate further environmental sensitive areas, and then the challenges. But those four areas will be separate.
In detail, okay.
A whole detailed input on it for us to engage.
Okay, then let me just narrow that question down, besides obviously approving of the priorities of the department. Also just to say, and this is more of a kind of thematic question with regards to environment, with compliance and enforcement. I'm well aware that the department operates on kind of campaigns where you move around provinces and would focus. And I know in the last few weeks, I think you were in Mpumalanga, you put out a press release on that. And I think you've done Limpopo. Rita, you've done another one as well. But the question I really want to ask is with regards to that, those people who are actually dedicated to compliance and enforcement, what is going to be done in 2011 to ensure that your compliance inspectors that work specifically on your so-called brown issues are going to be increased in number? Because off the top of my head, whenever I do those calculations, you know, you've got about 1,000 green scorpions, and about 800 of them are actually park rangers. So how are you going to work to improve the number of so-called green scorpion to focus on brown issues in 2011? And linked to that, if I may ask, are there any plans this year in terms of compliance and enforcement to actually structure yourself to work more effectively with the blue scorpions as well? Because I do understand that the legislation actually allows you for some cross-accreditation now to also enforce the Water Act. And I know it's an issue we'll deal with the Water Department when it comes, but having on the one hand just said and implied that you probably have too few green scorpions to work on brown issues, what we know for certain is that the blue scorpions are far less incapacitated even than your green scorpions. So is it going to be a year of greater coordination, and what are you going to do to improve actual numbers of people working on brown issues in the environmental sector? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. That's important issue, though. This is Shoshana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the DG has mentioned issues related to waste management at municipal level. I want to know the programs thereof at the municipal level and provincial level, the management of those programs. How do you administer those programs at that level? And the law enforcement, how do you enforce law for those programs in order to realize your objective as department? Secondly, there is this program of WISAIBAG, and of which is a very visible program. But what are other programs that are visible, particularly in the rural areas? And also, this WISAIBAG, it should be strengthened so that it can be visible in all areas, because the program that can be run even almost every month or after 2 weeks, you can run it so that people can know exactly. Because this department is not known on the ground. People, they don't know. When you talk about the environmental affairs, they don't know what are we talking about. But if we can intensify these programs, really, we can realize our objectives and our plans so that everybody can understand this department. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm relatively new to this committee, so if my question is a little bit out of order, please guide me. My question around the performance bonus has been covered. I wanted to know, how does the department justify that? Secondly, looking at the replacement costs for the polar research vessel, now, with which other department does this agreement, do you have an agreement with, and what is your responsibility and that of the other departments? Looking at the manning and operational costs for the Agulhas and the maintenance and repair, will that be put out? I mean, is it going to be resting soon, or when are you expecting this new vessel to be operational?
Any further questions?
Thank you, Chair. On the rhino poaching, I will wait for the debate,
yeah,
on that. But firstly, let me say to all of you that Happy New Year to all of you, 2011, and that one is looking forward that we'll host the best COP17 as South Africa. Chair, also one of my comments, I would like, I don't know when will we be able to have time to discuss maybe something that we need to put in the program where we will look at the staff performance. I'm saying this because I have looked at the schedule that we have here on the different expertise of the staff and the area that they're supposed to be specializing on. So I would love us to look at this at some point, because one have got some number of issues and comments on that. But having said that, DG, on your problem statement,
it's still going to be input on HR.
Okay, fine.
But we'll see if that's enough or we need more.
Okay, fine. On your problem statement, year in and year out, as a department, we know the problems that we are faced with all the time. You are saying that the 2007 environmental report demonstrates the deteriorating conditions of our environment, increase in water pollution, poor air quality, poor waste management, and so on. My question, therefore, is these things, as I'm saying, year in and year out, we know that there are problems that we have. And always the presentation that come in front of us are always talking about planning and planning and planning
every year we are planning, you know, the very same things that we know that are a problem, but we continue to plan. My question is, at what point do we start implementing the plans that we do every year so that we can be able to see the end result? Because we know what the problem is. Why do we plan for something that we know instead of coming with a strategy and implementation thereof? I think, you know, one would want really that we really scrutinize and get to the bottom of this planning every year, and year in and year out we are planning. On your top priorities, you know, because sometimes for me, you know, words means nothing sometimes. You can put them, it's a nice English to have it in the paper, but it's actually at the end of the day means nothing. Again, this is a problem that we always talk about. You know, municipalities, you know, capacity in the municipalities to implement certain things, waste management, you know, and all that. You are talking about supporting, you know, just picking on one, actually. Support local government. Support local government in what? And in how? How are we going to do that? Because end of the year, we'll still be talking about supporting local government. And local government is still going to continue doing the very same things that they are doing, you know, doing, still having all those difficulties and problems. And yet you are talking about the support. Can we be specific when we are saying that support for local government in doing 1, 2, 3, and this is how we are doing it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Mashebe.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On your key area of concern, you mentioned alien invasive species. I just wanted to know what is the program thereof, because we've been talking about it, and if there are programs, I want to know in which provinces are there, are we making progress, as it was reported before that we are having progress. But for now, I don't hear anything about it. I just see here that increasing. I want to know the outcome there, because we did talk about it. And then this one of the integrated linkages, especially about the grass. You mentioned something about grass cutting function. I want to know in terms of this intergovernmental linkages, are you working only on grass cutting? Is that, or is there something? What is other challenges that is imposed, especially in terms of grass cutting? I just wanted to ask another question. So just give me chance. Yeah, I think on your top priority, Honorable Ndude have partly covered me. You talk more about support of the local government. I think if we are going to put more effort in supporting the government, I think it will be better. Because sometimes last year we ask a question because of the environment. Some of the dumping site are just right at the river where people drink water. So if you mean it, we will see if this is going to work, because as Honorable Dude has mentioned, I would like to see something that is written here. Being follow-ups, when you fail, you must come again here and say, this program that we thought is going to work, we didn't make it. Specifically because I think it will overlap into the water. Because I'm asking this because we went to Nagoya, we presented something. I want to do the follow-up on that. That are we on track? Are we going or can we? Thank you.
Anyone else informed?
Thanks, sir. Mine is directed to the DG. DG, there is an order from the President of the Republic to all the government departments to prioritize job creation. Now, I want to know whether are there any systems or programs that you envisage putting in place to make sure that you meet this challenge. For instance, these things that Mangani was talking about, say maybe rolling out waste collection or these other programs within the department. And this does not only mean introducing this process or whatever within the department or its entity, but also it can mean fast-tracking other services within the department, which in turn will translate into job creation. For instance, fast-tracking things like EIA, which can really make it a point that the building industry employs more people within a short time because we have expedited that process. So what are you doing regarding that instruction from the President? Thank you.
All right. Can we get the Department to answer those questions, please?
Thank you, Chair. I will deal with some of the questions, and I just want Peter to respond to the focus on air quality and what we're doing at local government and waste management in terms of support to local government. Honourable members, I think the way I'm going to respond to these questions, partly some of the answers are in the presentations of the DDGs, because I was giving an overview, and the overview also was linking us to our strategic plan in terms of what we are going to table. And we are required by the law to plan again every year, Honourable Member Ndude. So we're complying with that requirement that we must do planning. But we have a report that says what is the progress in each of the areas of key performance areas that are outlined in our strategic plan. And therefore, that discussion can happen in that context. Each DDG can respond to those details, but we do have them. But just by way of example, give you the comfort, we are a department that's supposed to be doing policy in the main and regulating, and not really very much hands-on on implementation. Of course, we have been asked, not necessarily legally, but we've been asked that we should also facilitate some of the elements of implementation, which is why we have a support program for municipalities, for instance, and for provinces. For instance, on EIAs, when we had the new regulation and phasing out the previous EIA regulation, we've had a program of support, and we appointed consultants, unfortunately, because in our establishment we can't quite have as many people as they are necessary to go and support each province in terms of hand-holding on dealing with fast-tracking EIAs. And I think the COO can expand more on how the regulations themselves have been simplified to make sure that we are able to fast-track the process and get the best out of the EIA system without necessarily undermining its importance in terms of environmental integrity or securing and making sure that we prevent environmental damage. I want then to first with Mr. Mateven on the matter of outstanding transfers. I agree with you, we have a problem on Buyisa Iberg, and in the previous briefings we did highlight the nature of the problems. From the previous executive, to the current executive, and there were processes to deal with the issues that related to corruption and maladministration, which were then subsequently implemented. Now we have a new executive, but even that executive currently has not found itself well with the board. There's been delays in terms of submission of business plans to the department and the quality of that business plan. And therefore, in terms of discussing the challenges in terms of Mr. Ibeck, that's something that we can provide more information on at a later stage to the committee. But definitely we are highlighting that we have governance challenges, and I do suspect that this year I might not be in a position to transfer the balance to Mwisa Ibeck, and that is something that we have to conclude with them. I met with them in December before we closed, and we are due to have a follow-up meeting with the board and the executive. In respect to the issue of performance bonuses, honorable members, in terms of the public service regulations, there is a provision for performance bonuses to be paid, and we have worked within those provisions. And I think our department, there is a link to good performance and how you reward that performance, and therefore it is more of an incentive that we've used to keep our staff motivated as an organization. It's not illegal. We've done it in the correct sense of then dealing with performance bonuses. Our issues in relation... The foot soldiers. If you recall, honorable member, three brief things ago, I did say that I had not received a performance bonus over 2 years myself. Yes, but I'm also now getting, got it now in the end this year. But we can give you the profile of people that get the performance bonus. It's from level 4s up, and it is consistent with performance and how the balance scorecard also gives an indication that we all own up to a certain key performance area in that section, and these are the people that contribute to it, and that's how we assess that performance. And basically we have records of good performance from low levels up to the high levels in the organization. And also I think maybe the misnomer about use of consultants. I thought we had tried to explain to the committee that there are services that in their nature in the organization require us to outsource. And some of those services are services that, for instance, supporting a province or supporting a municipality. In most instances, that capacity, there is no justification for us to have some of those positions in our structure permanently, and we deal with those as projects. And therefore, on a project-by-project basis, on a need basis, we then use the external service providers. And I think the information that we've provided now to the committee members, it's sufficient for you to scrutinize, and then at a later stage we can have further discussions in that regard. And the Auditor General in particular also looked at the at the consultants and the way we procure consultants in the organization. So I think that there are justifications in most of the areas, and there is a process for the approval of use of external consultants. In respect to the Honourable Member Morgan's question on the priorities, I think we can concur with the Honourable Member that air quality focus in terms of local government in that priority area of compliance and enforcement, we meaning air quality both in terms of implementation capacity at local government level as well as then on enforcement, compliance and enforcement, and FITA can expand on the actual implementation plan in that regard. Rhino poaching, what will be done differently? I think in this current administration, in terms of the outcomes-based approach, we have been asked to say what is it that we are going to do differently in each of the areas that we then pursue as a department. I think, honourable members, I can confirm that at least National Treasury gave us an additional allocation for us to fight in this area in terms of compliance and enforcement, and therefore we are going to step up implementation of our plan to cap rhino poaching. I also have had a discussion based on the fact that now we have money. We could not get the deployment of defense force in the Mozambican border in the Kruger area because we needed to provide some operational funding to the National Department of Defense, which we did not have. And therefore, our plan was being delayed that they will probably come in and help us with deployment of staff around mid of this year. Now that we have an allocation, we are going to be able to step up and use that capacity. And I think there are other concrete implementation plans that we will then pursue with the additional resources that have been provided. And again, I think the issue of proportional work on the EMIs, on the brown issues, and the and stepping up more on how we then get capacity to execute our overall enforcement work in the area of brown, whether it's waste, whether it's hazardous waste areas, compared to the green issues. I think that is an area where we can take our plans and a step up. And I think our numbers in terms of what will then be captured in our strategic plan would therefore reflect that. We are trying to work with water on the blue scorpions. Because, as you correctly mentioned, the current legislation, the amendment that we made on NEMA in respect of Environmental Management Inspectorate, we made an amendment that then recognized the Water Act as a specific environmental act, which then allows us to then use the same system in terms of the implementation of and compliance activities within the Water Department. However, there have been debates amongst the lawyers in water affairs as to whether that is applicable to them. They do not believe or they did not want to comply with our notion that this has to be implemented. But I think the minister has given us an instruction that we have to begin to synchronize our regulatory systems across the departments, and at least while she's still in charge, she thinks that must be pursued regardless of the technical difference that we might have amongst at officials level. So I think you can take that matter up with water, and I will raise it again with the DG of acting DG Water to indicate that this is an area that Parliament also is encouraging us to work together. In respect of then the waste management programs from the Honourable Kosana, I think we can do more. But our starting point was that, again, waste management, especially collection, domestic waste collection, is a local government function. We then appreciated that there are different provinces or districts that have serious capacity challenges, and we then did an assessment of what those challenges are, and then we've been engaging with COPTA, which is the Department of Cooperative Governance, and the National Treasury in terms of how best then do we close that gap, both in terms of funding municipalities and at the same time also looking at landfill sites and making sure that there is also credible disposal sites that are permitted in terms of our legislation. And the gap in terms of funding at that time, it was around 5 billion that would require to actually capitalize this process and support local government. So with limited resources that we have, we continue to fund projects by projects which are not long-term sustainable in respect of municipal capacity to actually maintain, to run the function. And those are the things that we are constrained on by the resources that are available. But where we have been able to provide support to municipality, that visibility can be confirmed and we can give you a sense of those areas in respect of the projects that we funded. And we in terms of our priority, we are saying we have to step up advocacy and so that also other parties can come on board. In the area of waste management, we also have an opportunity to work with private sector and through PPPs where it is possible. And we still could do undergoing an assessment of how we would have to undertake that in our consultations with Treasury. Lastly, honorable members, then I can give the two colleagues. On the response to job creation priority of government, we have already responded, and both in terms of the new growth path, the job drivers and priority areas, the green economy is one of them. And we have already indicated how we are going to contribute in that regard as the department. And also over and above that, in terms of expediting the EIAs, we have simplified the regulations which have been shared with the committee in the past in terms of being able to provide a responsive actions in respect of implementation or processing of environmental authorizations. On strategic infrastructure, already we are rolling out there is a fund that's been established by the Department of Public Enterprises that supports EIAs that is linked to some of the road infrastructure within Transnet or rail infrastructure, and in other areas there is also possibilities that we could do that in terms of making sure that there is turnaround time within the prescribed time frame, but at the same time we also run a credible EIA process without undermining the purpose of the tool itself. Peter, you want to come in?
Thank you, DG. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I'm just going to quickly talk on the enforcement aspects, and specifically around the enforcement of the brown areas. The so-called green scorpions, the environmental management inspectors, I mean, Honourable Morgan is quite right. Only about 20% of these designated specialists, enforcement specialists, and I must emphasise that they are enforcement specialists. These are not just environmental officers that have received 1 or 2 weeks of training. These are people that have gone through highly intensive training with practical courses and so on and so forth that are eventually designated by either the minister or the MEC as professional environmental enforcement agents. Only 20% of them are in the brown area. And of those 20% as well, they're also in an area of enforcement where there's not a huge amount of experience. Unlike the Parks Board rangers who've basically been enforcing environmental legislation for many, many, many years, the actual experience around enforcement in the brown area is actually quite limited. So there are three elements of the program to improve our enforcement capacity. And it's quality, in terms of the quality of training, and there's increased pressure for more training, specifically at the municipal level. Quantity, more people. And in actual fact, there are a number of people at the municipal level that have been trained but have not been designated because of a difficulty in the designation. Because, as I said, the designation is made through Minister or MEC. Now, the difficulty of a municipal designation is now being resolved, and a whole bunch of people who have gone through training will soon be designated, and there are a whole bunch more ready for training. And then the final element of the campaign is around confidence. It's because very few of these EMIs have actually really ever arrested anybody or actually done an inspection, what have you. Is one of the things is through the national enforcement campaigns, things like Operation Pharaoh, and I'll just quickly touch on that as well, new EMIs are actually given hands-on experience in enforcement actions. And from that, they build up their confidence, and sure enough, straight after these campaigns, suddenly we see far more enforcement actions happening. Because it's true. I mean, this is actually a bit of a scary business. When you go into a very large polluting business, and you're an official, and you're seeing all these powerful industrialists and what have you, you actually have the confidence to make an arrest, do search warrants, and so on and so forth. And so through these operations, these enforcement campaigns, we're building the confidence of the EMI. But with that as well, the enforcement campaigns are in themselves exceptionally successful. And I just want to talk about quickly around Operation Pharaoh, which in essence is a compliance campaign that was initiated 2 years ago, looking at specifically at the metal, steel, metal, and ferrous metals industry, and specifically an air quality focused campaign, because that's one of their major sort of sources of emissions. The direct result of that is that, first of all, there have been launches of two of the most progressive air quality cleaning retrofits, cleaner production retrofits, into two of the dirtiest industries in this country in the last 2 years. And the first one was the launch of the dust extraction system at ArcelorMittal in Vereeniging, which basically has turned a plant that has been polluting dramatically for 50 years overnight into a spotless clean plant. And the other one is a plant that is, that was in the news 2 years ago, which is the Assmang plant in Cato Ridge, which actually had explosions and they killed workers and what have you. Assmang has also installed a high-tech dust extraction system, which has basically reduced the emissions of that plant by something like 90%. And these are purely as a result of proper compliance and enforcement. Many people have been begging, for instance, Assmang to clean up for many, many years. It was only when, for instance, their CEO was threatened with going to jail that suddenly decisions became very, very easy to make. And massive improvements in air pollution were done despite the fact that for 30 years people said it was impossible to do. Thank you, Chair.
He wants some information on which jails they will go to and who will be waiting for them there. One-eyed Dick and so on. Just tell us. We'll give you the information. I think it will facilitate movement.
Razina, on the polar vessel question. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair, honorable members, colleagues. The question on the SAR Gallus, how it is funded and co-funded and what the future plans are. Firstly, if the current SAR Gallus will is functioning until June next year. We're in the process of building another vessel, and the Department of Science and Technology will very closely with us. They have also paid for particular equipment. And also in terms of the management and manning of the vessel, a contract will go out for that. Currently, Smith & Mandla, the company managing this vessel, a contract, we will put it out for tender for the future. We're also busy with embarked on a process that's going to go around in terms of naming the new vessel. So it's not axiomatic that it's going to be called the SAR Gallus 2. So that's another process. So I hope I've answered your questions in that regard. Thank you. Honourable Chair, honourable members, this is hopefully one of the last times that I would be speaking about EIA, but I will still speak about EIA. This is a typical example of actually implementing a plan that was finalized in 2008, which was known as the 6-point turnaround strategy for environmental impact assessment. The first part of it was law reform process, which we finalized in 2008. But simultaneously with that, implementing the systems in terms of making the process more efficient without compromising its effectiveness. And that includes rationalizing the list of activities so that unnecessary things, small infrastructures with known impact, is not subjected to the system. And that came into effect with our 2010 EIA regulations, which is substantially reducing the number of activities, but still subjecting things that would have impact. In terms of improving the efficiency, that is a three-pronged approach. The one is just building the capacity, making sure that there are enough people in the provinces and nationally to do so. The second part of the implementation is to complement the EIA system with strategic instruments to make sure that the planning, talking here about spatial planning, is informed by environmental considerations so that you don't deal with things like cumulative impacts, placing landfill sites in inappropriate locations at project level, but to deal with that at spatial planning level, and that is where the environmental management frameworks that the DG has spoken about came in. And the third one is to have special dispensations for strategically important developments, and the DG talked about the SIT fund, and the only way in which you can have faster turnaround times is if you have capacity, and that doesn't mean just people, it means people that are skilled, that are experienced, that can recognize information, that the information is good, complete, before, you know, subjecting it to a long review by junior staff. And we use indirectly the developers themselves to pay for that through the DPE, the public enterprises process, where Eskom and Transnet are contributing to a fund that allow us to appoint experienced people to do the review of it. The last element of the turnaround strategy was to also ensure that we start having accountability on the behalf of the consultants that are doing the environmental impact assessment. And you might be aware of the registration process where a professional code of conduct is being compiled for environmental consultants. There's also talk about what is reasonable pricing, because some consultants charge really very, very high amounts for very simple work. And that process is also far advanced. We are waiting for a date in the minister's diary to actually launch the registration authority for environmental assessment practitioners. So I think it's all of those different interventions that need to come together. We can report that in terms of the strategic important developments, we are 97% of all applications qualifying as a strategically important development. 97% of them are being processed faster than the regulated time frames. So I think they're certainly being seeing the results of that process.
Thank you. That's a good start. I think we must realize that this is the first day of a whole month for us to look at it. So I don't want us to go into too much more detail. There'll be a lot of time for it. I want to try and pull a few things together for us to be able to move on. Of course, also, you're quite free to engage the department at other times as well. Can we... The first thing is, you know, I find this thing on page 3 and 4 quite interesting. This thing called the 2007 State of Environment Report. I don't know, do members have a copy of it? Yes. Well, of course, I'm the odd one out. So I'm sure you'll send me your copy with all your notes here. Now, what I want to suggest on this thing, you see, I think we must use this as a basis for a document to be drafted by the department. This is the first time ever I've seen a list of where the environmental problems in our country are. I've never seen this before. And if we use this thing properly, then what we can do is, if the department takes this and each section takes it, you take the first one, South Africa ranks 20 biggest greenhouse gas emitter. So if you have a second column, as that gentleman down there said to us, these two factories were two main contributors. They've now... So what we can do there is, if you can give us where about 75% of which creates that greenhouse, at least the categories of it,
then we...
It's common sense. Well, there we are. So what we do, you see, I think what will be useful for us is to firstly know which is the biggest contributor to that problem. Mm-hmm. And then in the third column, you put to us all the things that you've already done to deal with that issue. Mm-hmm. And I suppose in the fourth column, mm-hmm. you put what else can be done. Mm-hmm. So if we have a document like that, it will start becoming a checklist for us that are not involved in environment all the time, to say, okay, a problem is greenhouse emissions. We've identified these are the main areas that the problem comes from, and this is what we've now done, and these are further things that we have done. Then we can start engaging you on saying, well, why don't we change the legislation, or we change the compliance by actually dealing with this issue. And that will become a checklist for us. So that's the first suggestion I want to make, that we take this, you go through that document, all the main areas of where we're having problems with environmental problems, and then you deal with that in those ways. I know it's going to take some time to draft, because we're going to have to do it, but I think try and bring it to quite a level of completion, and then if you can then bring it to us, we start interacting on it, see if we may need more information or whatever. So that's the first suggestion. Then on areas that I think we may need some more engagement are the following. Two small issues. Look, well, they're not small issues, but I mean, let me first mention. First is consultants. You see, you're never going to convince me. And I'm so easily convinced, actually. But you'll never convince me easily about consultants. And Mr. Mateva has made a nice link, performance bonuses when you've got consultants doing your work for you. If we don't properly engage on this, and you are able to convince us that where you're using consultants, you should be using them. So I think you should go and sit down and look at this issue of consultants. And take the categories of where you do consultancy and how much it's costing you and why it is that this cannot be something you start creating within the department itself. I think once you've done that and we've gone through it, then you may not get these questions anymore. But until you've convinced us that those are areas that clearly, you know, look, no one expects, I mean, there are sometimes major areas of expertise. You will never get a person like that employed in government. And the only way you'll get that person is somewhere else. So I think if you come and break it down to us like that, one, you've already said, these services you provide to provinces and so on, it's haphazard, it's ad hoc, and it's no use to get staff. Now, if you come and convince us that you're spending $20 million on that, we may say, okay, good. Then you tell us, these are experts that clearly you will never employ in government. The top scientists on gas emissions. You know, the top whatever on this or that and the other. These people you'll never... So these category of people, there is no way that we can do, you know, we'll ever get them. Doesn't matter what we give them as a salary, you won't get them. And then to break it down in categories like that, then come and convince us. And I think once we've had a proper engagement on it, because look, let me tell you, in government there is huge wastage on consultancy, huge wastage. What we're trying to say is, let your department have a look at itself, and really come and convince us on consultancy, okay? The second issue...
One other disturbing issue is that this consultant, most of them, are the people who were in the department. They go out and come back as consultants.
I know in other departments where I've been, there's definitely the people leave and then they come back and you buy their skills back. So, but I think those are all the issues you have to deal with. Obviously, that person now is the main, I don't think if a person like that is now outside would fall in that category of a specialist that wouldn't have worked for government, because can't they have worked for government? So I think what we must do is unpack that, okay? So you get a report ready for us and do that. Second thing, performance bonus. Look, performance bonus is one of those great evils in government. I say it to you, great evils. Because I think, personally, of all the experiences I've had in government, it's a waste. It's a complete and utter waste of time. I mean, it's people that are... I mean, the DDG has to evaluate the people below him. Once you evaluate the people below him and give them a bad result, then you must have a bad result. Because how come they bad? I mean, it just doesn't work. I mean, you will never... I want to see the manager that's going to give people below them bad results that's going to reflect on the manager themselves. I mean, so the system is a very bad one, and the system often is dependent, I know in the department I was, where you've got big departments, maybe this is a small one, so it's not in terms of staff. Big departments, it's made conditional on money. So what they do, they basically tell everyone just about you must get a performance, so they don't make anyone angry. And then, of course, they say, okay, this lot we won't give any money because there's no money. So you've got this performance thing to say you perform well, but then you don't get paid because there's no money. So I think there's huge flaws with this system. We were trying to fight now in communications to get another system going, and so on, so on, so on. But because it's REDS, we have to deal with it. Now, I think again, I think what we need is for you to go and sit down and unpack this thing. And say to yourselves, look, this is how it's done. And I will be glad, you know, I know it's easy for the department to say, okay, but this comes from DPSA, we'll do it like DPSA tells us to do it. But I really would want this department to come up with some new innovative way how to do this. So that we can have some trust in before. You know, why I say it's an evil, because I don't think if you work for government, you're working as a service to the people, you're getting paid a salary. I think performance bonuses have to be then something that you do over and above your usual work. That's why I say it's an evil. I don't think you should get paid bonus for doing the work you should be doing. I just have a big problem with that. A huge, huge problem. I mean, if you come up and you've tell me you've made an innovation as a DGG and you for the first time ever have found a new way of measuring gas emissions, and this has now become the standard in South Africa, and then I say, shh, this person's gone far beyond. Maybe we should give them a bonus. So that is how you have to know how I approach it. I know a lot of MPs approach it. We think that. So therefore, we need to find a way that gives your system integrity. Because, you know, and the other thing I want to know is, I want to know which sections have been given performance bonuses. Because I'm going to sit here, oh God, forbid, I mean, maybe move somewhere. But okay, while I'm here, I want to tell you, every time you come here, I want to see the units, the ones that have made mistakes and problems and haven't got their reports in time. Then I want to see there which ones got performance bonus in that unit. Because then I want to get this committee to make an input next time when performance bonuses come around and say that unit shouldn't be getting performance bonus. We as a committee think they shouldn't get it. Maybe that's the one innovation that we should bring in. That where we have problems, that we as a committee start saying that unit is a problem and you better come and motivate, and we'll tell the minister also. So the minister knows when she gets that report from you, DG, saying give these billions of rands to people for performance bonuses. That is. So it becomes an accountability tool. So will you do also a report for us and unpack this issue of how performance bonuses are? And like the perception that Mr. Matebe has, which happens in many departments, is that this is for the top people, the bottom people don't get it. Okay, so I think do a report like that for us. So that's the second issue. The third issue, Ms. CFO, who's done such a good report, what we need is a full unpacking of the next budget. So prepare an input on looking at the next budget and in the way you usually do it and what we're going to be able, these priorities here, how that is fitted in the new budget and so on, how it's going to be paid for. So get that input ready for us. Then, you know, the challenges with your financial management, maybe not yours, maybe that other gentleman with a little hair. Can we, whoever it is, the one with a lot of hair, the one with a little hair, we're going to have the AG coming to us in the next 2 weeks to come and unpack the risks in this department. I want you to have a report ready, so you must talk to the AG before then. I want you to have a report ready to tell us here on those risks that they've identified, what is the department doing to put those risks and sort them out. So when we get the AG's report of these are the problem areas, at the same time we get you to explain to us what it is you put in place, and then the committee can engage and say, this is not good enough, we need extra, etc., etc., right? So it's the budget you have to do and the challenges of the... Then one or two of the issues that have been prioritized. I think what you must do for us, all of us are very interested always in the local government and how we assist, because local government is the weakest part of government. So I think you should... I when you gave the input and your answers, I couldn't fully understand. I can see with the water affairs what the link is quite clearly. I'm having difficulty with environment. So what I want us to do is to unpack and give us a report explaining in detail what this interaction is you have with local government, and I mentioned the provincial government also, and then what it is that you're going to do to support them, and what budget's available, you know, so that we know. Because then we can also start interacting with local government and making sure there's synergies and so on. So that whole issue area that's been raised by Ms. Manganye, let us do that. Then there's a very important issue that we've not asked questions about. It is absolutely vital for good governance. And this is the issue here of integrated permitting. If it's one of the biggest holdups, you know, I had people that have a farm out in Stellenbosch and they wanted to build houses to let their workers have their own houses and so on. I must tell you, it took years of trying to get those houses being built. In the end, he just had to ignore government on my advice and just go ahead with the stuff. And government then caught up. Because what happens is, because, you know, when we drafted the constitution, I think particularly us in the ANC, we didn't know very much about government. And the people that were in government didn't know much about government either. We were all in the same position. And when we divided powers into different areas, you know, these are your national powers, these are your concurrent powers, and these are your municipal powers. A lot of it was a lot of thumb-sucking, and because it's been done like that forever in a certain way. But what happens now is that when we start imposing legislative frameworks on different departments, it actually becomes completely onerous for people to form businesses, to invest money in the country. So this issue of integrating permits, particularly, as you say, your minister said, between water affairs and environment, is absolutely fundamental and should be prioritized. What I want you to do for us is to go in each area that you've got permits, and then you unpack it for us. This area is just an environment one. It doesn't affect any other. This one affects water and it affects whatever. And these are the steps we're going to take to try and integrate this stuff so that we get a program and we can hold you to account in terms of how we're forcing the different departments to try and integrate these regulatory frameworks. If we then have to change the acts and change the regulations to facilitate that, we're not saying that any department must take over another department's function. Not at all. We're saying keep your functions. But what you must do is when one impacts on another, and sometimes you must have this one before an environmental impact before you can do this and before you can do that. How do we streamline that in a, say, a document or a guideline agreed to between those two departments? Those two departments says we give permits and they give permits. Both of us give decisions. From now on, we're going to do it in this manner to speed up the process. Now, if you can get an agreement between those two departments, now, of course, now everyone will have to act in accordance. And if they don't, then clearly we can shire the ones that are not doing it well. So, integrated, if you can now concretize it more in terms of what it is we want. The next one is, I know this one's a bit tricky because the problem is this is a process that's taking place now. You know, I didn't realize that when the president announced rationalization of public entities, I thought he was talking about public enterprises and those ones. And I see now that you're also part of the rationalization process. So I think without trying to preempt those results, I really think you should prepare a document and come and talk to us. Because what you're going to come and tell us, or suddenly we're going to hear, Buyiswa Ibag is going to be rationalized away. Sand parks is going to be rationalized away and the department is now going to deal with parks. I mean, those are the possibilities. I mean, it's really looking at those entities and saying this should really be a government function and shouldn't be somewhere else and so on and so on. And that capacity. I mean, that is the way to save money, to have less enterprise. Now, this is really a fundamental issue. And we need to create a platform where we can talk about this and the implications of this. I mean, members here know better. They've been involved in this area. I mean, if you talk suddenly, you're going to put this institution back into the department. I mean, they will know what the implications are. We can then engage and so on. So I think a whole input around this rationalization of public entities, I think, is a vital one. And as I say, we're not wanting to preempt that process taking place in Treasury, but I do think that it will be a bit unfortunate if the only time we hear about this is once it's a final report. It will be really difficult because to then try and undo a final report, you wouldn't. And I think we should engage on a way so that you can hear as a department also what our feelings are on some of these entities, and this can be fed into the process.
So that is the next one. Those are the three main ones. And then I've already said that climate change and compliance campaigns, which will have a further input later, that those should become more prioritized. I think even although we've not received the input on the poaching and stuff, maybe what I should really suggest, and we can look at it later, is that under this point three, compliance and enforcement, health, weight, rhino poaching, environmental impact assessments, and air quality, I think you should prepare a document for us there also, saying how you're going to make that a top priority. I mean, a top priority, you know, I often find the worst example often in government is the issue about gender, about women. We say women is going to be a priority. We have men out there abusing women, abusing children, rape is rampant. Then when you go to individual departments that have to deal with it, you say, this is a priority of government. How in your program is this a priority? Then they give you a long report about gender issues and how they... But you say, but that's an ordinary program of government. That's not prioritizing the issue of abuse against women. I mean, if something's a priority, it means you change things. You give more resources, you give more focus, you give more impact. Otherwise, it's not a priority. Otherwise, it's just one of 300 so-called priorities. And so what we need to do on these compliance issues, I think some people have already spoken on compliance, how important it is, it must be a focus. What I need us now to do is unpack what that means. Health waste. I mean, there's a few people we should be knocking around their ears with health waste. I mean, you know, I saw a child one very recently in the township walking around with a syringe with a needle in it, who picked it up in a rubbish dump, which there clearly was health waste there, whether it's from a doctor say, or where, I don't know where it came from, or someone came and dumped it there. But the point is, you know, those things are just a disaster. I mean, you know, and really, if there's one area of compliance, those areas we should, and those, most of them, are either government or doctors. They worry about their status. So we've got something to hold them by. And then I'll add who they're going to sit in prison with, which will be a further incentive for them to do it. And then rhino poaching, the same thing, environmental impact assessments, although we've had the input. You know, when I was appointed to this position, the only people that have ever come and spoke to me is people that tell me how bad environmental impact assessments are. How they're holding up processes, how they're holding up businesses and so on. I mean, I'm quite serious about this. Those are the only ones that engage me. So clearly, we must get our house in order. It may be that our system is as good as it should be in our level of development. But then we should start engaging the public and engaging people to say why. And we as a committee should say we are actually happy that it is at the right level. It should not be lower than it is now, or it should be lower, or these permits that are going to be integrated are going to speed up things further, etc., etc. Okay? So could we have on this compliance and enforcement on those four areas, including air quality, we have you then unpack to us what it means that you're going to make it a top priority, what more resources are going to be there, and etc., etc. These kind of campaigns that we're going to get a report about later, are they going to be now integrated in all four of them? We're going to run for all four of them campaigns like that with the kind of staff we have. Those are the suggestions I wanted to make. I've not said anything further about the climate change and compliance because we're going to get separate reports and we'll do it there. But I want to suggest, if the committee is happy, that all those areas that I've outlined are further priorities that we want reports in February and to deal with and to flesh things out. Everyone happy with that? Anyone want to add or subtract from it? Mr. Skusana.
Yeah, it's Jefferson, who are quite happy about the manner in which you are structuring these issues. If they can be structured in that manner, it will allow us to interact with them and also evaluate ourselves in terms of performance, in terms of delivery, and in terms of interacting with the communities and so on. No, we are quite happy. We support your idea.
It must be done quickly. Everything like this, we must do it in February. So it means in a week's time, I may call you for your report. You must get ready. It's going to come on your performance bonus, this one. Ms. Langanya?
No, I think the chairperson has covered me. I usually said I'm born before technology, but you have got the point that I wanted to say, especially that one. I want to know the challenges of this integrated linkages. It's the one that I wanted. But if, through your permission, if they can tell us when they come with that report, where are the challenges in terms of this integrated linkages with other governmental issues, you know?
Well, I hope that will all be in the report.
Yeah.
First identify the permit, then identify what other departments are involved, then identify what seems to be the holdups, and then by then, hopefully, you would have already started interacting with those departments, and then to try and find solutions, and hopefully in the end we'll have a protocol that will now say this is how we'll integrate these things. So all those things will have to be dealt with so we can evaluate it, Mark. Mr. Morgan?
Thank you for all of that, Chair. Just to add, because we're doing kind of like procedures going forward, one of the things I'd like to suggest at the top of it is that your department in the course of the year puts out, you know, 10 pieces or so of regulation, so-called secondary legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Could we also get into the habit of, and I know we have to table it as well, Chair, but this committee hasn't had a habit of it, quite frankly, in the last 3 or 4 years, where we are included on in an early stage when you basically are about to publish or do publish these secondary regulations. But I don't just mean giving us the document. I mean, I can get that off the government website, and I do. But actually, the kind of background information on it, the motivation of why it's necessary and where it fits into the primary legislation. Because this department passes a lot every year, and granted, you know, you do your comment process and all the rest of it, but the primary legislation gave the executive the right to do that. And there is no attempt at all to even engage this department. Now, granted, I mean, in the future, we should do a better job of probably making sure when we write legislation or amend legislation that indeed you have to bring those things to feedback to the committee for a briefing. But I would like to see you get into the habit of making sure that we are brought in on that at an earlier stage and not just left to being the equivalent of ordinary members of the public who submit comments through your internal processes.
No, that's fine, but what I want us to do is when we get the legislative program now, it should be part of that. I mean, legislative program, I usually include policy. And so what we must do is, if you look at the new agenda I've driven, right in the beginning it's legislation, delegated legislation, and so on. So I fully agree with that. I think what must be done is when we get your legislative program, not just what legislation is going to come this year, but also what regulations are going to come this year. So that, as Mr. Morgan has said, obviously we have a particular role to play in it. We can't dictate in what it is, but it is useful then if we get inputs at some stage to say, these are the regulations we're looking at. We're thinking of amending the EIAs to now provide for this. We're thinking of amending this, or we're thinking of getting new regulations in this area. And at least one is aware of it, number one, and number two, there can be inputs into that process. Secondly, you know, I know in justice, what we did in justice to try and deal with this is we then provided for it in the legislation. We said the minister can draft regulations on the following. 1 month before these regulations are signed by the minister, they have to be tabled in Parliament. And so what you do have then is the regulations are at least here before a month. Of course, one can make those more elaborate, but I'm at this stage hesitant to do it because we don't have the capacity to really. I mean, some parliaments have a special unit that just looks at delegated legislation in terms of not policy, but in terms of it either intra or ultra virus, and there's 3 or 4 criteria by which you judge it. I can also say to you that when I was in another life, in another capacity elsewhere, I was also aware that it was agreed in Cabinet that there must be a special unit in the Presidency which costs regulations. so that, because a lot of the costs of particularly service delivery departments, the costs are in the regulations, not in the legislation. I don't know how far they are with that unit and whether it's up and running or whether it is approving regulations. I got a feeling it's not, but I know it definitely it was agreed to. So there are a whole lot of things we can do there and interact, and it'll be one of the things, as you see, I've got it on the list, and from now on I want a list of whatever regulations will be coming during the year, and we will definitely interact with those. So you can be ready with that, and whoever is going to give the input on legislative program, if it's not there, make sure regulations are there, dig it up. And then also, so we're going to turn now to that input on legislative program. Also, you can just include in there if there are any attempts to deal with policy issues, except we know the green paper, so that's fine. But are there, like Water Affairs, I know, is starting to look and reviewing their white papers, because, I mean, it's a few years later and so on and so on. Please also inform us at this stage so that we're aware and see if we should put it in our program, whether there are any of the white papers or any new policies that you are going to look at during the coming session. Okay, can we move to the, what's the time? Half past 12. All right, that's perfect. It's just enough time for legislative program. Quick input and quick questions and so on, then we can adjourn for today. And then we'll do all the specific topics tomorrow, okay? Tomorrow morning. Joanne, I'm not worried. She's leaving government, so she can sit here until we're ready.
I'm not leaving government.
At your you're not, but you're suffering because of her now. Okay, legislative program. Let's do it quickly.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just as an overview, we're going to be doing looking at some of the amendment bills.
Sorry, is there a document for this?
Yes, there is, Chair.
Number?
Okay,
there we are. There, you're
right.
All right, go ahead, sorry.
Okay, then the second area, as you indicated, Chair, is policy. And we've also listed the subordinate legislation, that's the notices and regulations that the department's going to be doing. So not only have we listed the regulations, but also the notices, which will hopefully clarify some of the issues related to, for example, what we're doing in terms of air quality and so forth. In terms of the amendment bills that we're looking at, the first one, sorry, this is not an amendment bill, it's a new bill. The National Environmental Management Oceans Ecosystems Conservation Bill. The focus of this bill will be to look at sustainable management and regulation of the marine living resources, as well as the protection of the marine environment. We've listed each one of them in this format, basically what the focus is, what the impact is, and more or less when we think there will be submission to Cabinet and also to Parliament. In terms of the impact of this bill...
you played it safe. Just put everything in the last part of the year.
Okay. Yes,
go ahead. I know you're wanting to vote in the local government election, so you're not putting anything in the beginning of the year. Sorry, go ahead.
Chair, what we're looking at in terms of impact in terms of this legislation is splitting the marine fisheries and the marine environment matters, and also to review and update the regulatory framework with regard to the protection of the marine environment. Next, please. The Integrated Coastal Management Act was also mentioned earlier, and there's an amendment bill. The focus here is specifically to clarify the status of our ports, as well as the impact of this act on the port specifically. Then we also want to align certain sections of the act with the NEMA, the National Environmental Management Act, and also to close some gaps that have presented themselves during the implementation of this act. I'd like to add, Chair, that a lot of these amendment bills are as a result of implementation, and the fact that once the act is implemented, you actually find out that there are gaps, and with the results, you have to work towards closing those gaps. The impact of this is basically to minimize the risk on port operations without compromising environmental integrity, and also to ensure that there's smooth implementation of this act. Those are our proposed dates there as well. the South African Weather Services Amendment Bill, I'm sure all the members are aware that it's quite an old act, so it needs a bit of pepping up. The focus here is to close the gaps once again, relating to the Act. We also need to bring the Act in line with current government policy and agenda. And also, they have new responsibilities in terms of air and atmospheric information management, which will need to be written into the Act. The impact is basically that the weather services will be provided with the necessary mandate and powers to implement its systems efficiently and effectively, and specifically with regard to air and atmospheric information management functions. Then we have the National Environmental Management Laws Amendment Bill. Here we look at all the Environmental Management Acts and issues related to those specific acts, and look at an amendment bill that tries to close those gaps. Chair, there's quite a few here. I don't know if you want me to address them specifically or... Okay, essentially what we're looking at is to add in a requirement for national and provincial state of environment reports. That's the report that the Chair was referring to earlier. So we want a provision to be in the Act for a national as well as a provincial one, so we can monitor those impacts both nationally and provincially. Then we also want to look at people who illegally commence with waste management activities and allow them to apply for licenses and pay an administrative fine, similar to what we have in NEMA. To clarify the Minister of Mineral Resources responsibilities and powers, to provide for the rectification of listed and specified activities in response to emergency incidents or natural disasters. Reference was also made to the COPTA process, which was looking at legislation and specifically issues around legislation that's holding up development and so forth. We've also inputted into that process, and out of that process there are certain sections of our legislation that we agreed that we would amend so we can actually improve that process. There's also a plan to amend Section 28 of NEMA and Section 48 of NEMA to exclude the criminal liability for organs of state. There's an amendment that's proposed to Section 40, Sub 8 of the Waste Act, as well as Section 38, Sub 2 of the Protected Areas Act, and then also Section 39 of the Protected Areas Act, to make provision that the Management Authority submits a management plan to the Minister or the MECs. The submission to Cabinet we're looking at mid this year, and Parliament next year. In terms of policy, we've basically, our focus this year is on the climate change policy, which I think has been discussed quite extensively. Those are the proposed dates. So I'm not going to go into too much detail.
You're not reviewing any other policy?
Not as far as I'm aware, Chair. I think our focus this year is going to be solely climate change.
Okay.
In terms of the notices and regulations, there's quite a few. Once again, I don't know if I should go through all of them individually or...
Just give us a taste of it.
Okay.
I think we may have to find a way of dealing with it in another way.
Okay,
give us just a taste.
Firstly, there's a notice to align the Schedules 1 and 2 of the National Environmental Management Act relating to name changes and functions of national and provincial departments. Then we're looking at certain amendments in terms of the EIA regulations, specifically Section 24.5. The proposed dates for all these are listed below there. Then there's a notice to amend Schedule 3 so that we add all specific Environmental Management Acts and NEMA. Next. CITES, there's proposals also to look at the notices and regulations in terms of CITES. We're looking at appeals, sort of to standardize the appeals on decisions that are made in terms of the specific Environmental Management Act. Just to give an example, NEMA has one regime, and for example, the Biodiversity Act has slightly different provisions. So we're just looking at aligning all the appeals, decisions, and the procedure in terms of all the specific environmental management acts. In terms of the Air Quality Act and notices and regulations, the minister's notice declaring the Waterberg region as a national priority chair, and this would also tie in with what you were referring to earlier in terms of what we're actually doing on the ground, and then Peter would be able to talk to more to this as well. Also, a notice publishing the IFOL priority area air quality management plan. A section 21 correction notice relating to the list of activities and associated standards. Then there's a national guideline on the format of the atmospheric impact report. Then also, Chair, we're proposing to do a national guideline on the application forms for atmospheric emission licenses, and also what the format of the emission license is going to be. Then regulations regarding the phasing out and management of ozone depleting substances, dust fallout management regulations, and also this ties in with Honorable Morgan's comments in relation to the legislation and what's being done ancillary to that legislation. Also, we're looking at doing national standards for domestic waste collection. That should have been done by the end of this month, the final gazetting. The national standards for the remediation of contaminated land and soil quality, and then also the waste management activity list amendments. Minister's notice changing of licensing authorities, waste classification and management regulations, and a municipal sector plan, which also in a way talks about what we're doing in the municipalities and how we're doing that. Commencement notice for certain sections of the Act. All right. In terms of our biodiversity issues, there's norms and standards for the hunting industry in South Africa that we're proposing, minimum standards for captive elephants, norms and standards for damage-causing animals, translocation of large herbivores, bioprospecting access and benefit-sharing amendment regulations, and then hunting regulations, and regulations for the proper administration of nature reserves as well. In terms of the World Heritage Convention Act, we're looking at an amendment to the regulations in, that regulate the Greater St. Lucia Wetland Park and also the Frederford Dome World Heritage Regulations. Thank you, Chair.
Well, as you can see, this is a, I didn't realize it's such a large legislative program. I thought I got away from justice. Then I had to come here.
It's to justify the performance bonuses, Chair.
I agree, but you know, performances aren't just quantity, quality. So quality will judge you. Now look, this is a huge program. Obviously, we'll put this in our continuous agenda so that we have it there. I'll engage with the DG further on how would be the best way for us to engage with them as they're drafting without undermining the process. Because, I mean, clearly, we cannot undermine the executive process in the sense of they're still thinking about things and then suddenly it's in the media and then they have to spend their time about fighting with things that have not been to cabinet yet, that they have ideas about. So there's a sensitivity about how we deal with these things. But I am on board with Mr. Morgan on this. I do think that it's important that we engage much more, and particularly also on regulations and so on, at an earlier stage. But the protocol on how to do that, we have to look at. It would be easy if we do it at a stage when it's finally been agreed to, like I said with Justice, 1 month before Parliament has to. But I think maybe it will be worth our while to take briefings at least on these regulations at an earlier stage, hear what it is you're trying to do. Because this one particularly, I thought, is a whole lot of substantive things changing, or wanting to change.
which are the kind of things that would be important for us to engage on beforehand. So the how, I don't think any of us disagree with that it must happen, but the how I think is a bit something we'll discuss further. Okay. Any questions, any issues you want to raise on this? Okay. Well, I thought that was a very useful morning. Particularly for me that hasn't been with the department before, I thought it was useful. And I think with the issues that we've identified, I think if you can write them down so that we keep a list of what they are and actually make it part of our minutes. So if you can write them down, I've also jotted them down. I do think there's a further issue. I think the question of Mr. Matebe has sparked something with me, with the job creation. Maybe what we should do, and I'll think what is the best way to do so, maybe we should get someone from Minister Patel's department to actually come and give us an input on the new growth path, and particularly how they see it impacting on environment and water. And then at that stage, then we engage with environment and water on the issues of job creation. So that will be an issue then also for flagging that we will take up. Because it seems to me if we have a good understanding amongst ourselves about what the ideas of the growth path is, then it's easier for us to interact with the department to see where you can do more or, you know, where you're doing some. So I'll add that to the list of issues, the new growth path, which we will then interact, do it with the departments, so that it's not something that's theoretical, just what is the growth path. It's how it impacts then on these two specific departments under us. Tomorrow we'll start again at 9:30. Are we at a different venue?
E249.
There'll be more space there. You can bring your family as well. You can switch out. You can bring your family as well. E249, tomorrow we will concentrate on the specific report, so it's more detailed, starting with climate change, and basically taking a full report on COP16 and what came out of that, because, I mean, I was there and I received the document and I read through it and I kind of like think, well, why is this exciting? So they're going to now tell us why it's exciting. And they are not. And then, of course, they're going to give us a little bit of an input on broad issues on COP17, because, as I told you, Cabinet has not yet looked at that. Can I please ask the department to make 100% sure that the documents we still got that haven't been handed out, that you make sure that the parts you don't want public at this stage gets removed from those. We've already spoke about us. We'll protect the ones that we have until that time. Okay. So, yeah.
Sorry, Chair, are we also going to deal with the green pack and the policy process?
Well, I would like you to give a small little...
Okay.
Well, that will be part of the policy processes. The process, you must tell us about how you see it.
Okay.
Of course, it's a little bit unusual now that we've got this as well. But as I said, I've already had a discussion with ministers a little bit and a bit with the DG. And obviously the way we see it at this stage... We'll spell it out tomorrow a bit more, but you can do that. On the green paper itself, I would like you tomorrow just to pull out a little bit about the green paper, not much, because what I've asked DG to do is for you to draft us a user-friendly document. There we are. You see, that's all done already. That even looks too long for me for user-friendly. I mean, yeah, you're talking about MPs. I mean, user-friendly to MPs. Now, I'm thinking of we need something a bit more specific and more focused. It's easier for us to take to our communities. Look, if our part of our role is to make this popular and people to get involved in this, then it's useless to have long reams of discussion on things that the experts and the scientists are going to do. So what we're going to want, a nice little document to kind of say, what we're really doing is this. We realize we're at this stage of our growth path. We realize we've got some problems with it because we're also emitting a lot of gases. But this is how we've decided to do it. And to explain it very simply on how we do it and what the green paper says and so on. But maybe that document does it. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so we'll see that. Abbreviation. So I think we're going to give you some more work to do, a nice little user-friendly grade 1 stroke MP idea of climate change. Alright, the second issue, so tomorrow we're not going to get into too much detail about COP17, except more what is our responsibilities there. Then later on we'll tell you how we're going to tackle those responsibilities, because clearly that has to be the cabinet stuff. And then, you know, whatever you say will be in WikiLeaks, so you'll see it in about a year's time. The second topic tomorrow that we'll deal with, the second input we'll take, so we'll have to check our times tomorrow, is the report back on the recent environmental law compliance campaign. This thing I was reading in the media about you guys going around and so on. I want to hear about that. The third one will be on anti-poaching activities. And the fourth one will be initiatives to further regulate mining in environmentally sensitive areas. Okay? You've dealt to some extent, there is another issue, what challenges and problems experienced with the entities. There, maybe you can think about it, but I'm not so worried about, you don't have to come and tell us we got lack of financial management in Buyiswa Ibag. I wanted you to give us the strategic, what are, when you interact with entities, strategically, what is difficult? Now, let me tell you, for example, I was in communications. One of the big issues in communications is that a lot of entities have been created, and a lot of that department's work gets us through the entities, not through the department. So the interaction between policy and implementation, and where it rests and so on, it's something we're trying to fix up. Now, I don't know what the situation is in this department. So what I want here is not an input on the different entities. We'll decide later which entities we want to see specifically about their problems. What I want to see is you as a department, it's a bit about the rationalization issue.
Yeah.
You as a department, where do you have difficulties?
Okay.
If you have policies in the area of parks, is it easy for you to say these are our policies and are they being implemented by the entities? Or is there a gap in the legislation that doesn't clearly spell this out, and therefore we're forever fighting about who makes policy and who... Now, I'm just using an example. I don't know. So that one, maybe you can spend a bit of time today. You've got the whole afternoon to do nothing.
No.
So you can spend a bit of time on just getting a few issues for us about the challenges that you as a department has vis-a-vis the entities. Okay? One thing that has struck me about the department is you don't have a unit that specifically concentrates on how you deal with the entities. Now, it may be that you don't need one. Maybe each of the but in other departments, it is a major problem because they don't have a proper capacitated unit that can drive policy that makes sure that government's policies and initiatives are actually part of those entities. Okay, so I think you know what I want for that. So there's 5 topics tomorrow. I'll take the time tonight. I'll think a bit about it. I'll tell you tomorrow morning how much we'll spend on each one. And as I said, we'll then take those 5 inputs tomorrow, okay? Happy, everyone, anyone else want to raise something before we adjourn? Chair. ANC members remain.
I just wanted to then excuse the DDG Mketeni for tomorrow, Chair, because he's right, is it?
I want to see the report when you get it. I want to see the results.
The results.
I want to see how much time you took away from government, and I want to see that you learned properly. I want to see. We'll distribute it in this committee. And we may have a special session to question you on it. It definitely will affect your performance bonus.
And Peter Lucas.
Peter?
Peter also tomorrow is...
Well,
yeah,
it's the
Mintec
meeting.
Yes, he's running a meeting with the province.
Isn't he doing the compliance thing?
No, we'll have the Gate of the Green
Scorpion. Okay, alright. Okay, that's fine. Please, the ANC, stay behind. And all those that aspire to be ANC. Okay, so now the whole meeting is going to stay behind. Thank you.
And let them prepare nicely, because there's not too much time to go to five. Let them just make sure that they can see now what I'm looking for. Just concentrate on it, okay?
You can just make sure that she keeps you in the loop.